둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Fix my name, Henry. Not even my mother calls me Henry.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. That way you get three new interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Some great guests have dropped by lately. We just talked with the cast of Citadel Honey Bunny and Citadel Diana, including Samantha Ruth Prabhu and Matilda DeAngelis from both of those shows. Suzanne Vega was here, Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, Sting, Kate Siegel from The Haunting of Hill House and Midnight Mass, Don't Move, that's on Netflix. We talked with Kelsey Asbel and Finn Wittrock from that movie, John Cleese of Monty Python, Black Francis of the Pixies, the cast of Shrinking, Tony Hale, you know him from Veep and Arrested Development. He's also starring in Woman of the Hour on Netflix. Depeche Mode, Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with Hank Azaria. I have been a humongous fan for so long. First of all, yes, he is the voice of many of the Simpsons characters since the very beginning, including Moe, Chief Wiggum, Duffman, Professor Fink, on and on and on. So, you know, a special place in my heart just there, but also all of his movies through the 90s that I was such a big fan of, from Great Expectations, Gross Point Blank, The Birdcage, America's Sweethearts, Now and Then, A Night at the Museum, to his work on TV with Brockmire, Friends. He was in Friends for a little bit. On and on and on. Even loved him in Hello Tomorrow last year. I don't think many people got to see that one on Apple TV. So this time, we could be talking about any of that stuff, but we're not. We're talking about Bruce Springsteen. And why? Because Hank Azaria has decided, when he turned 60, for the, as he says, the third act, unintended third act, to start a Bruce Springsteen tribute band. He's been a lifelong fan, and he's going to tell us the story about starting Hank Azaria and the Easy Street Band that not only does, get to scratch this new itch of his, but also raises lots of money for charity. So he'll tell us about spending the months perfecting Bruce's vocal style, finding a new passion in singing authentically. He also shares how performing these songs live has unlocked a really fresh enthusiasm for storytelling and music, blending his impressions with personal stories to capture Springsteen's spirit on stage. And along with his tribute band, we're also going to reflect on some of this extensive career, including memorable roles in The Simpsons and Friends and a whole lot more. This is such an honor for me, and I had such a fun time doing it. Let's jump into it. It's Kyle Meredith with Hank Azaria.
Hello, Kyle. How you doing?
It's a pleasure to have you here. Usually we might be talking about one of your many, many film or television roles, or of course The Simpsons, but I'm so happy because today we get to nerd out about Bruce Springsteen and your Hank Azaria and the Easy Street Band that you've been doing. What for the past, it's just this year, right? It started earlier this year, right?
Started in April with my 60th birthday. I had some mixed feelings about turning 60. Asked myself what might bring me joy on a day like that, besides having a lot of people I love around. And thought I'd surprise folks by working up. I've been imitating the way Bruce talks since I was a teenager. Let me try to sing like him, see if I can do it. Put together a band, and we ended up playing for almost an hour and a half. And instead of gifts, I just said, please donate to my foundation. We raised $30,000 that night. So, you know, we put two and two together and said, why don't we do this a couple times a month, raise money for the kids, and sing like Bruce for the fans.
That's really great, by the way. And knowing how deep your fandom goes with Bruce, but taking the jump between playing for some friends and family and then, I mean, this is your first time fronting a band on stage in front of people, I think, right?
Definitely. Definitely. And it feels like the first time, no matter how many times I do it still. Yeah, it was quite a leap. I was so nervous just on the night of my birthday that I've never thrown up from nerves as a performer in my life. I did that day. I think it's because how much this means to me, because of my deep love and fandom of Bruce and how much these songs mean to me. And I think it was less about making a fool of myself, although that was part of it, and more about doing these songs any version of justice, you know. And and I worked harder on this vocal singing impression than I've worked on any other voice job in my life by a lot. I spent over 6 months. It was a weird side door I found into trying to learn how to properly sing, which I'd never really done before, even though I've sang comedically and in character a lot in my career. I never tried to sing authentically before, certainly not like Bruce. It was a whole different deal, man.
Has that helped your non-Bruce singing voice? Like, is there a Hank singing voice?
Yeah, there is. I mean, tremendously it has. I mean, if you can sing kind of through this rasp, you can definitely sing otherwise. So I'm always caught between trying to capture the impression, which I am trying to do. I'm a mimic at heart and by profession. And I'm also trying to sing as well as I can. Those sort of go hand in hand. The first few months, I really just worked on the impression by myself. Then when I got it to a place where I thought it was getting pretty close, then I worked with a vocal coach to see if I could support it properly and actually sing and breathe and you know, spare my voice, because it's hard singing like that for even 10 minutes, let alone an hour and a half. I don't know how Bruce does it for 4 hours.
For 4 hours, yeah. So when you deconstructed it, like, what was the actual process of finding his voice? Because one of the things I've always found interesting is for a Jersey guy, he has a surprising little bit of twang that pops out every now and then.
There's somehow a bit of country in his voice. I'm not sure, in his speaking voice, I'm not sure where that comes from. And so I mostly go off of live recordings that I'm imitating. I've been a huge fan ever since I was 12. Back then, I was 12 in 1976. And back then, that was absolutely the days of vinyl. I don't even think cassette tapes existed yet. I think we had 8-track tapes. If you Google those, kids, if you want to know what that is. So, you know, about every weekend, we go down to the record store and look for bootlegs, look for live recordings of Bruce concerts. And I always loved those live versions. That continued. Now you can go on Spotify or wherever. You can find endless amounts. And there are even some versions of Bruce's songs where he absolutely does a country version. Like there's a recording of Glory Days and a recording of Darlington County and several others where he just sounds like a country singer.
Especially, I mean, the fun thing about those two that you just mentioned, because I love listening to Bruce and I think I'm just usually looking for an excuse, and knowing this was coming, I'm like, I'm going to listen to every album in sequence and get as far as I can before this interview takes place. And you know, get it going from Nebraska to Born in the USA, and remembering, because I hadn't thought about it in a while, that there's a version of each of those records the opposite way. There's a version unreleased of Nebraska that sounds like the big production of Born in the USA, and a version of Born in the USA that's, as we've heard, like in the original version that he has released, that title track, that sounds like Nebraska.
Yeah.
I know I'm getting off track from the original question anyway, but it's crazy that that guy can do that with any song. And knowing that, yeah, those rustic country-esque versions of Born in the USA exist, like, to me, that's what I've always assumed about that twang that I'm talking about. Like, his influences, you know, of some of the older country stars must have just, like, crept in so hard that it took over just the way he talks.
I guess so. I mean, he's also, his speaking voice to me has some of that kind of 1950s, 60s kind of cool jazz, hep cat musician speak to it, almost beatnik, you know. So I don't know, but I think for Bruce, I mean, he's written some songs that could pass as country songs for sure. I think because country music, it's often tells such a story, you know, and so do Bruce's songs. They lend themselves. But yeah, you know, the stripped down, you know, Nebraska version of Born in the USA is really haunting. And I don't know, conversely, Atlantic City from Nebraska, if you've heard the live version of that, the electric, that I think he did on that MTV concert he did, which was supposed to be unplugged, but he plugged in. That's an amazing version of that. That's the version of that song I prefer, actually.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Hank Azaria. And it says so much about his songs. Like, they can exist. He was a you know, Dylan fan as well, and that's the master of it to me. Like, Dylan, I don't know how his mind works, where he says, I can write a song and then I just get to choose which mood it's going to be, which sound it's going to be, which version it's going to be that gets released. And there's like 10 different versions of every song, and I think Bruce, you know, is pretty good about that as well, Atlantic City being a good thing. So you mentioned, though, you know, 76 was your introduction. Like, what do you remember, like, hearing it for the first time? Like, what was your first Bruce?
I do. I was at summer camp, and David Blumenfeld, who lived in my bunk, was playing, I think it was the song 10th Avenue Freeze Out. It was definitely from Born to Run. And I said, what's that? And he was like, what do you mean, what's that? You know, he completely derides, like, that's Bruce Springsteen. Like, who's Bruce Springsteen? He's like, you got to be kidding me, dude. Who's Bruce Springsteen? And he played me the album completely. It really, you know, it, like a lot of us, it was love at first hearing, and got completely obsessed with Bruce that summer. That summer was filled with Bruce and ELO, a lot of Electric Light Orchestra that summer as well. Then, you know, not long after that, Darkness on the Edge of Town came out. But in that time, I had circled back to Bruce's first two albums, Greetings from Asbury Park and The Wild, The Innocent, and The Street Shuffle, and had memorized those albums without meaning to by the time that Darkness came out. And that was it. It's just like one of the amazing things about Bruce's music, right, is for those of us who love it, he feels like he's singing personally to us. I felt like he was narrating my life, even though I wasn't particularly into cars but it just felt like it, especially those early albums that captured that kind of male teenage passionate spirit. His poetry married to his music, we all know, right? It hits you on a very deep level.
And it's incredible, those lyrics, like right from the blinded beginning in Greetings, is how incredible those lyrics are. And for the band, for the Easy Street Band, for your band, like, I think you're mostly concentrating on those first, what, five albums, Greetings to the River, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say right now, anyway, the latest song we do is Wrecking Ball.
It's a
But
great one,
yeah,
yeah.
it's a great song. And there's a lot of songs from Lucky Town or The Rising or several others I'd love to do. But yeah, we focus mostly on those first five albums.
There's such a looseness to that music too. Like the pop 80s, hadn't happened yet. And your band, like the videos I've seen online, like being able to pull that off because of that looseness that still existed on those first five albums. Like I don't even think they can write like that anymore. Whatever that was, however that what happened, like it's such an interesting thing. You've been inside the songs now. Like, did you sort of find stuff that you didn't notice about them before?
Yeah, I got really fortunate because I had this idea. My son is a pretty gifted piano player. He's 15 now. His jazz piano teacher I knew was in a Genesis cover band. So when I had this idea, I hit him up. His name is Adam Cromwell. I knew he was a professional musician as well as being a piano teacher. He also scores TV and film. And I said, "Can you put this together for me?" And so we worked together for months, shifting the songs into a key. I sing a little bit deeper than Bruce. So we brought him down a step or two, found the right key, worked on a lot of songs. In that time, I was kind of beginning to learn how to sing properly in order to bring myself up to the level of these songs. And Adam was playing piano along with it. He put together a band of professional musicians. Now, these are all kids, kids to me. They're all in their 30s. And they really didn't know this music. Only one of them, our bass player, Jeff Koch, his dad was a huge Springsteen fan, so he grew up with the music. They played it so they play it so brilliantly, and they pick it up so fast. I assume they all were assumed that they were all familiar with the music as I was. They were not. So one of the joys of this for me, of many, has been they've now fallen in love with this music as well. I mean, they have no choice. I'm their boss, and they got to play it. I'm their boss there. Bruce is the boss. I'm their boss. But they actually have. You can tell they've discovered the raw, beautiful poetry, appeal, simplicity, complexity of this music, and the joy in playing it. I mean, that's what I've discovered is like as hard as it is to sing these songs, and some of them really are hard. I do feel like I'm inside them now and understand them in a different way. Because what it takes to sing them, singing full out, which I'd never really done before, is an act of I don't know how to describe it. It's scientifically proven that your vagus nerve really likes it. Your body enjoys whether, no matter how well or not well you're singing, that fully committing to singing like that, it's like dancing. It releases endorphins. And some of those rock and roll noises that Bruce makes, especially that screamy noise he makes in some of the live recordings, like there's a live recording of Prove It All Night that we sort of based our production on, and towards the end that that kind of thing, when you unleash that at full volume, it's like gestalt therapy, it's like scream therapy. Sometimes I get really I've gotten emotional doing it because it's like it felt like years of teenage angst and upset that he was just screaming out in a song, and it kind of hit me that way sometimes, so just trying to perform it.
Just to be this far into your career and unlock something like to discover something about voice and the emotion that comes through voice that you hadn't before, like that's interesting, I think.
I didn't mean for this to become like an act three, starting when I'm 60, mini career here. I just wanted to have fun and cheer myself up at my birthday party and surprise my friends, who are most of them are Springsteen fans, and just kind of blow people's minds with, "All right, here we go." And the way I went into it at my birthday was like, "Yeah, I know y'all know I can talk like Bruce. Can I sing like Bruce? Fair question. And I am prepared to prove it. In fact, I'll prove it all night. One, two, three, ha!" And we went into, but yes, that has been another big joy of this is finding, and I'm a vocal, nerd. So to discover another way to pursue that and unlock something, I didn't mean to do it, but I'm very glad I did. It really has kind of rejuvenated me in a lot of ways. I've rediscovered a love of It was hard for me to find anything new to do vocally, you know, at this point.
And, you know, what we haven't talked about that, though, we're tiptoeing around too, is because the other part of your show is while you are doing the Bruce voice and singing the Bruce songs, you're telling your own stories. And this is where the high concept of what this goes on. Like, what is that side of things? Like, what do you get out of that?
Well, that idea, well, those bootlegs I mentioned, those early live recordings, Bruce often tells stories, very long stories sometimes during those. We called them talks. Well, there's a great talk on this bootleg from the Main Point. There's a great talk on this one from the Coliseum, blah, blah, blah. And those talks, as much as the music really impacted me as a teenager, a lot of time the messaging in them was follow your heart, follow your dreams. You can be a creative person if you want to be. You can be who you are. And I had some very troubled times, especially as a teenager. And Bruce's music and those talks really got me through them. So they're an idiom that I'm very familiar with. And I'm a mimic. So I tend to memorize what I heard and kind of spit it back the way I heard it. And so really, though, for the party, I knew that, you know, I had 550 people of my closest friends and relatives there. And I knew that half the folks were going to be Bruce fans and half would be new to it. So I figured I'd introduce the songs and tee them up and explain why they meant something to me, you know, as part of the night. You know, I didn't know whether I'd be able to get two songs down. I ended up playing 10 songs that night. And in the course of introducing a song or explaining why it meant something to me, or why it made me think of my son, or how I met my wife, or why I learned Bruce wrote this song and the circumstances behind, say, Dancing in the Dark, whatever. I thought that was a fun way to keep the audience interested that night. And I love imitating Bruce. And I was like, well, can I tell these stories about myself as Bruce? That's weird. But it worked. It worked. And then now that's part of the show. It's like this weird, yeah, it's like this weird sort of one man show that is a tribute band, but is also this homage to Bruce's storytelling verbally as well.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Hank Azaria. I can't wait to see one of these. I'm already selfishly in my head, like, thinking about the songs I want to hear you play that you haven't yet. Like, I gotta hear some Devils and Dust and Radio Nowhere, some of that late mid-career stuff, you know.
Right, like we haven't gotten to the later stuff. The one we met, that live Electric Atlantic City, I really want to add. We're adding four new songs right now, which brings us to about 20 in our repertoire. I'd love to get 30. That's my goal for the course of next year.
Yeah. So that's the plan. Like, you're still going through this, like. Like, how, you know, like, this just goes until you decide you don't want to.
Oh, I'm all in on this. I love it. I turned down a lot of things in favor of this. I'm very, very fortunate that The Simpsons puts me in a position where I can pick and choose what I want to do. At the ripe old age of 60, there isn't too much I haven't done at this point that would make me really want to go experience something in the acting world. I mean, that said, I'm about to do this really lovely series with Mandy Patinkin, where I'm playing Thomas Edison, oddly. I'm doing a week on Broadway in this interesting project called All In, very funny thing, Lin-Manuel Miranda and some other very talented folks. But those are short gigs. I'm really mostly dedicated to this. I'd love to take the tribute band to the height of that world is really playing like 2,000 seat theaters. And the bigger venues we play, the more money we raise for the foundation. And I just, I nothing brings me more joy than working up these songs, figuring out stories to tell to go along with them and playing them. I mean, and I keep my learning curve as a singer is very steep. I'm really enjoying that. I keep unlocking different parts of my voice, getting stronger vocally. I'm very obsessed now with building that up. So I'm really loving this.
You mentioned the roles and the other roles that you've done through your career. I had to bring some of those up as well because Gross Point Blank, one of my all-time favorites.
That's a deep cut. I love that movie too. Yeah.
Those soundtracks, as we're talking about music, open me up to so many incredible 80s alternative artists as in the country of Kentucky, when that wasn't readily available.
You know, I think that John Cusack had a lot to do with that soundtrack. He's very musically oriented and knowledgeable, and I think he helped handpick a lot of those songs.
That was a great one. Anyway, your character in that and Birdcage, Herman's Head, Hello Tomorrow. That was such an interesting show, and I love that. I guess I'm not expecting that we'll ever see a second season from the sound of it.
No, that thing didn't do well enough to continue. I thought Billy Crudup, who's a friend of mine, was really extraordinary in it, like Emmy-worthy extraordinary. I think that unfortunately the show was kind of taking on too much and two separate ideas that didn't quite come together. But it's too bad because Billy's work was pretty amazing in it.
I had him on here to talk about that, and that retro futurism. I'm a sucker for that every time. On the television shows Friends,
Yeah.
did you ever talk to Courteney Cox about your Springsteen fandom at that time, knowing that she was in a music video?
Maybe I mentioned a thing or two. I tell a story about Paul Rudd was there tonight. I met my wife. This is in real life. And I tell that story that night leading into She's the One. But I don't think I ever discussed it with Courtney. And we do dance in the dark too. But I didn't discuss it with Courtney, I don't think.
So that's one of those moments. Do you reveal just like your nerddom at that point? Like, I know that you've been a part of the story.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
unloading that off, that's onto someone. That's that can be a lot, I think.
Yeah, I don't even consider that nerdy. I mean, that's just, of course, what's nerdy is when, you quibble about the lyrics to Wild Billy's Circus Story with someone and, you get into a deep conversation about that for half an hour.
I know you've met, or I've read that you've met Bruce a couple times. Have you talked to him since you started doing this?
No, I get very nervous around. I fanboy so hard around. I tell that story too in concert in the middle of Growing Up. But I heard apparently Patty Scialfa and myself share a dentist, and she was in his chair, and he had one of my, I think, our Thunder Road video, and he played for Patty, and apparently she liked it. And thank God saw it for what it is, which is this loving homage, and apparently played it for Bruce, and he got a kick out of it. But who really knows?
Well, he's good about that. Yeah, he's good about the pop in, with the thing. And you're gonna be playing, I think I said it, but Brooklyn Bowl. You're playing Brooklyn Bowl on November 8th, and
Brooklyn Bowl, November 8th. That's right. Come on down. There's plenty of tickets still available.
that's the opportunity right there. That's
Although
like
we're nearly, we'll be at the Stone Pony at the Mothership November 15th. That one is very nearly sold out already.
I know we only got a couple minutes here. I have the most random of question that
All
I'm
right.
probably not right about, but I've wanted to ask you for over 25 years, had I ever had the chance. So here's this movie, Great Expectations, which you were also in. I don't have this picture here, and I wish I did, and it might have been on a VHS or a DVD or something. The older lady who was in the movie, there is a picture of her sitting at a table. Maybe it's the right angle, but I swear to God, I thought that's Hank Azaria in her wig with the makeup on. Did you
Gee, I
ever do
don't
that?
think so. No, I did not do that. That is, you're right. That's a strange question.
That is a strange question.
Was it? It wasn't Anne Bancroft, was it? It was Anne
Anne
Bancroft.
Bancroft, yeah.
We do look like we could be in the same family, that's for sure. She sort of played the Miss Havisham character, and I got to know her a little bit. She was married to Mel Brooks, and she was an incredibly talented actress. And she's a very sweet woman. And Mel is a very nice man, also. They did, Mel Brooks did some Mad About Yous around the time when I was hanging around on that set a lot. And so I got to meet her and know her a little bit. I didn't work with her in that movie, but no, that was Anne Bancroft that you were
All
looking
right.
at right
I
there.
mean, I thought that was the possibility, but there was enough times that I saw that picture. I was like, one of these days, if I ever get to ask him that, I'm gonna at least to make myself feel better. Mystery solved. And then, of course, with The Simpsons, my God, I know that's its own conversation. I was looking over and I found this little guy sitting around.
Oh,
So,
Bumblebee Man.
did you with as long as you've been doing it now, with as many characters have you that you've done, as we're talking about voice work, was there any that like was hard to shake? I want to say that you could lose yourself in. Like I've asked actors that, you know, like, you know, have you ever had a role that was hard to shake? You know, and some people have that. Does that work the same way for you?
No. I've done some projects that were hard to shake. Like I did a Holocaust drama about 24 years ago, a miniseries for NBC called, when they still made such things, called Uprising, about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And, you know, it turns out trying to reenact the Holocaust every day will depress you. And I was genuinely emotionally affected by that and couldn't figure out why. A week or two into shooting that, I'm like, gee, why am I so down? And, you do tend to psychologically sort of take on what your character's going through. Like most obviously, if you have a day on a set where you need to cry in the scene, right? You know, it's only maybe a minute on film, but you've spent about 12 hours or 8 hours that day doing that scene. So that's like 8 hours where you've been near tears or at tears. You know, your body doesn't know the difference between like fake tears and real tears. And that sort of plays on you. And if you're doing a role that is going through a lot emotionally, it can really affect your mood for sure, for real. Like without even being a method actor or any kind of like crazy commitment to the role, it's just that it's why it's more fun to do comedies, you know, more fun to spend the day deciding how can we make this the funniest, as opposed to how's this going to be the most intense and depressing and you know, upsetting. I do once I lock into a voice, like, you know, I talk like Bruce, the body tends to follow.
When I talk like Chief Wiggum, my IQ goes down by about 80 points for some reason. I talk like Mo, I just get a lot angrier. My face gets, you know, I look angry and I am angry, quite frankly. I could kill you right now, Kyle.
That does happen, but it's not like I can't shake it at the end of the day.
But just keeping up with as many that you've done, that's the impressive parts, among many other impressive things that you've done, I should say. But I'm so happy that you found a new one to embody as well. With Mr. Springsteen here, I can't wait to see one of these shows, man.
Yeah, please come as my guest, in fact.
And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it, man. That's been so much fun. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us, yeah.
My thanks to Hank. You can find him on stage with his Easy Street Band. And of course, you can always hear him Sunday nights on The Simpsons, among his many roles that he mentioned he has also coming up. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Before you leave here, hit that subscribe button so you get 3 new interviews just like this one every single week. If you like this one, why not have more? You can find us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And again, please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Those always help out so much. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where you'll find me Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Bob Dylan, Steve Earle, Barty Strange, U2, The Velvet Underground, Nat King Cole, Teenage Fan Club, Isaac Hayes, Casey Musgraves, Florence and the Machine, Jamila Woods, Violent Femmes, Jason Isbell, Waxahachie, Liz Phair, Alanis Morissette, Green Day, and my interview with Simon Le Bon of Duran Duran. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Afternoon is correct, at least where I am.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.